Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Sometimes the scariest things in life are the things that could happen to you at any time. Welcome back to the Swamp, my friends. We are in episode 3 of the Scary and Strange Story series. This is a series where I cover stories that I normally wouldn't read on the channel, such as stalker stories and stuff like that. Normally, I don't really have an interest in that, but so many of you guys sent in your stories like that, I decided that I would start sharing them. Joining me today is my good friend Vitif22. If you enjoy his voice, please be sure to subscribe to his channel. His link will be in the top of the description. Now, without any further ado, let's get into these creepy stories that'll freak you out. If you have a story you would like to share in a future video, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I went on a school trip to Quebec, Canada, and it's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been to. Great food, lovely sights, etc. At the time, I was 16 and our group had just moved from Montreal to Quebec City. Once we made it to a hotel, it was time to turn in for the night. I need to mention that I went to a school for kids with mental and emotional difficulties, and a younger boy who was a friend of mine had a mental condition and went into an elevator with me. A group of college-age people also went in with us, and there was a large muscular guy who was a part of this group. The younger boy was cradling, I think, a stuffed Flareon from Pokemon in his arms, and a group began to make fun of him, and he started to cry. The group left, and I gave the kid a hug and told him not to worry about those people. A few nights later, after we got back from an amazing night exploring Quebec City, we ended up back in the hotel, and since we got back earlier than most people, we had some downtime. A group of friends wanted me to come down in the hotel lobby to play Smash Bros. With them, and I thought it would be fun, so I made my way to the elevator. The large college student from before was in the elevator. He was a prick for laughing at the boy, but I didn't want any trouble, so I decided to try to be polite and let him through. He wasn't paying attention, since he was texting, and he bumped right into me. He looked at me with an expression of pure hatred and said something along the lines of, "Oh, you must be one of those special American kids. You're in Quebec, not Ontario, so you should show some respect, stupid kid." To be frank, I was already pretty mad, honestly, because this guy had bullied that kid earlier, so now I was furious. I hopped into the elevator, and just as the doors closed, I coughed the word, "Asshole," under my breath. That was a huge mistake, because he heard it. I heard his footsteps thunder down the hallway like a rampaging bull, and he began to pound on the elevator doors. I decided that this guy would probably be looking for me now, so I snuck back upstairs using the stairway. I safely made my way back to my room, and one of my friends came back to my room, and my suspicions were confirmed when my friends were approached by this guy and asked where I went. My friend said nothing to the guy, and apparently, the man was furiously searching for me. The next day, after a delightful breakfast, I got into the elevator. However, the guy had followed me somehow and rushed into the elevator as the doors were closing. He grabbed me by the collar and threatened to slit my throat and dump me in a nearby river if I ever said something like that in his country again. He pushed me to the floor and got out. Thankfully, this was the last day of the trip, but the encounter was still very fresh in my mind for quite a long time. I suppose I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Even after the encounter, I still love Quebec and I hope to go again one day, although I pray I'll never meet that gorilla of a man ever again.
When this happened, I was around 13 years old. To understand this story better, I'll have to explain a couple of things first. At the time, I attended a school that was for students who were in 5th, 6th, and 7th grade. Kids from 10 to 13 years old, mostly. Once you go to the 8th grade, you have to go to a school located beside the one I was in. I was in 7th grade. Although I was friends with many people at the school, I wasn't very popular because I hated to be the center of attention. So I wasn't used to people having a crush on me. Now, when you leave the school and you turn left, there are some bus stops, which are made of metal. So if you're inside or behind one, no one can see you. On the way to the bus stop, it's possible to see a road by your side. If you go through the road, you end up at a candy store. I had gone to it many times. The road was normally quite quiet, and almost no one would pass there, especially at night. It was all bumpy, so you couldn't really run in there, and worse than that, there were many alleys along the road. So there was this time when myself and my two friends decided to go to the candy shop. After buying some candies and some sodas, we were climbing the road to go back to school. We then passed through two guys who were going down the road. Well, I've seen those guys at our school. They were 1 year below us. They were kind of popular for being like bad boys, you know, the type of guys who smoke and skip classes. Then one of the guys, let's call him Manny, said hi to us. My friends ignored him, but I, being the kind and cheerful person that I am, said hi back. The guys then started giggling and whispering to each other while continuing down the street. I didn't pay much attention to it and continued on my way back to school. A couple of days later, I began to notice Manny would always be around the places where I was. Not near me, but close by. Note that he never, ever talked to me, aside from that first hi. I wouldn't pay much attention at first. But the school was very big, so it couldn't be a coincidence. I then decided to test him. When I saw him around, I'd asked my friends to start running from one place to another, and surprise, surprise, he'd run to the exact place we'd run, but at a safe distance. If it wasn't for my great capacity of noticing small things, I'd have never noticed this. Some more days passed, and although I was a bit creeped out by him, I learned to get used to him always following me around. He'd also send me lots of messages through Facebook. Although we weren't friends in there, I never responded to him, but he wouldn't give up and kept sending messages. So I blocked him. But what made me completely freak out was one episode. I used to attend after-school sports, which were normally from 5 p.m. to 6, sometimes 7 p.m. So once the sport was over, it'd be nighttime already, and it would be dark outside. I used to attend badminton classes with this one friend of mine. I attended these classes since the beginning of the year. Our gym was divided in two. One half of the badminton classes was happening, and the other would be the futsal class, which is like soccer, but inside a gym. Us badminton players never had much contact with the futsal players, aside from some balls landing in our half once in a while. I never saw Manny attending futsal classes, but he started to after that high exchange. Then, when he began to attend futsal classes, many more balls began to land in our half of the gym, and he'd always be the one to come and get them. At this time, I was starting to get angry because, first off, he took away my relaxing break times with my friends at school, and now he was taking away the only time I had to play my favorite sport. But the scary part begins now. One day, at the end of the sports practice, my friends and I were leaving the changing room. The girls' changing room exit leads right outside, so you don't have to go inside the gym again to get out of there. So once you'd leave the changing room, there'd be a normal rock path that led back to the school's main building, and there'd also be a small wall, really small, like 1 meter high, with plants and dirt on the top. So my friends and I were leaving the changing room, and sitting on the wall, waiting for us, were Manny and his friends. Let me remind you again that we never talked to them aside from that high exchange, so why would they be waiting for us? We brushed it off as them just killing time sitting in there before going to the main building. So when they stopped their conversation to look at me, I gave them a disgusted look and started to make my way to the main building while pulling my friend along. Once I did this, they got up and started walking very close to us. I started to get scared. They never followed us this close before, and it was nighttime, and there was no one at school. Teachers and most of the school's staff had already left. I then had an idea. I said loudly to my friend, "Oh, we're late. My mom will kill me if we don't hurry." Then we sprinted out of the school. I could see Manny and his friends running behind us. Luckily, my friend and I were faster, so we left the school and walked to the bus stop. We thought about running to the dark road and hiding in an alley, but then we looked at the bus stops and we saw some of our friends there. We ran to them and explained what happened. Then one of my friends told us to hide at the bus stop. Sure enough, seconds later, Manny and his friend arrived at the bus stop. They asked our friend if he'd seen us, and my friend proceeded to tell him we went to the dark road to go to the candy shop. Manny then said good, with a smirk, and he and his friend ran down the road. We thanked our friend and went away in the opposite direction. Even after this happened, I didn't tell my parents nor any adult. I thought they'd think this would be normal for a boy to do to his crush. Like I said, I never had anyone like me before, so although I was uncomfortable, I also thought this was normal. Another thing that made me not tell anyone was the fact that I was going to change to the school besides the one I was at the time, since I was going to the 8th grade. But even though I changed schools next year, I kept seeing him sometimes outside, since he wasn't allowed in. So I began to only get out of school when I was sure my mom was already waiting for me outside. During 8th grade, I began to get scared. He would finish 7th grade, so that meant he was going to my school. But during my 8th grade, I got into some problems with people from my class. I was bullied, so I developed depression and I became suicidal, and when my parents found out about this, they thought changing schools was the best option, so I didn't have to worry about Manny anymore. The reason I'm writing this is that recently I was at the train station. It was my first time going by train all by myself, and I was sitting on my bench at the station waiting for the train while reading fanfiction on my phone. Then I noticed a guy on the ticket machine on the other side of the station. He looked familiar, so I waited for him to turn so that I could see his face, and sure enough, it was Manny. I instantly got scared, especially because I was alone. Fortunately, I had changed a lot in 2 years. I changed the way I used my hair. I changed my style and I lost a couple of pounds due to my depression. I was completely different, so I prayed for him not to recognize me. I'm not sure if he did or not. He stayed on the other side of the station the whole time, so I felt safer, but he kept glancing at me and talking on the phone with someone while giggling. When my train arrived, I made sure he didn't follow me. Then, once I got home, I decided to tell my older sister the whole story. I've never told her, so I wanted to hear her opinion about him. When I finished telling her this story, she was creeped out, and she told me to be extra careful from now on. My sister is, and will always be, very protective of me, so I'm still not sure if she's exaggerating. I still don't know if this is normal, but to this day, I keep thinking, what if that night my friend and I decided to go down the road instead of explaining to our friends the situation and hiding? Would my friends think the guys were our friends and told them that we went to the dark road? And what would happen if they had caught us?
This is one of those experiences that sticks with you regardless of how much time passes. The kind that you make sure to tell your friends and family when reminiscing about scary experiences. This took place during my high school days, back in 2008. Starting high school wasn't really the best time in my life. I despised the politics of high school microcosm, and I didn't get along with most of the students or teachers. In fact, I was kind of an outcast. I decided I was through with school because I saw it as nothing but a toxic environment and a waste of my time. This naturally didn't go over well with my parents. My mother is a schoolteacher, so I would have to hear those lectures about how education is the foundation for the rest of your life. Blah, blah, blah. Looking back from where I am now, I can agree, but I was an impulsive teenager with a lack of common sense. After about a year, I enrolled in an alternative school called Moore Mickens, which was a place of sanctuary for pregnant teenagers and dropout rejects like myself. They offered me the opportunity to obtain a high school diploma in a special program that would allow me to graduate a year earlier than I was supposed to. I was originally class of 2011, but this program now made me officially the class of 2010. Shave a year off my sentence, sign me up. I went through the process of being enrolled, and before I knew it, I was hopping on a bus for the first day of my sophomore and junior year. I couldn't help but bask in the admiration of flunking my freshman year, and yet was still one step ahead of my former classmates. When I arrived, it was basically back to square one for me. I was surrounded by young women at various stages of pregnancy, and young men with time in the juvenile hall under their belts. Needless to say, I didn't exactly fit in with the crowd, so I would sit alone in the cafeteria during breakfast and stare off into space, speaking to no one. That was until this dude I recognized walked through the lunchroom doors. His name was George, and he was one of the very few people I actually talked to at my previous high school. We weren't exactly close friends or anything, but he was the only person I knew at Moore Mickens. And it turns out, we were pretty much in the same boat. I waved him over and we made small talk and reconnected. Later that day, my sister offered to pick me up from school, so after classes were over, I went outside to the parking lot to wait for her. George had someone picking him up as well, so we got to talking again. "How was your day, man?" It sucked. "I hear you, man. People are so stupid. I wish I could just kill them all." Yeah, sure. "I'm serious. I would totally bring a gun and just mow them all down. I hate people." "Yeah, sure, man. Hey, there's my sister. I'll catch you later." George went silent and gave me a blank stare as I quickly made my way to the car. Now, you're probably wondering why that conversation didn't raise red flags. But I had about a million things going on in my mind, so I brushed it off. I just thought it was some sort of morbid conversation, some maybe bitter adolescent talk, you know. The next day, the class schedule alternated and George and I ended up having the same art class. On a side note, the art teacher and I were cool, because she would let me draw pictures of skulls and zombies and stuff instead of doing the lame-ass work she assigned. Anyway, I was sitting at the table with George and two other guys. The two dudes were talking with each other and I was drawing this sweet picture of Iron Maiden's The Trooper. George suddenly got up and walked over to the classroom door and ripped down a map of the school that was taped to the wall next to the door. He brought it back to the table. He proceeded to make marks with a red pen. One of the other guys asked him what he was doing. "You'll see. Everyone will." Even then, I didn't think too much of it, even though I remembered the conversation we had at the parking lot. You have had to understand that George seemed to get off on the uncomfortable attention he got being vague and creepy, and the school was meant to be a place for outcasts. I figured he was just imagining some messed up fantasy or something. A couple of days later, I was walking to that art class again, but just before I entered the door, it opened, and a police officer left the room escorting George away, followed by the principal. I froze in genuine shock and dread, and all I could think of was, "Oh crap." George was staring at me with cold eyes as he passed, and I had to look away. Turns out I wasn't the only person he hinted to about this twisted aspiration. The school was full of young parents after all, and apparently they took this behavior as more of a threat than I did, and in retrospect, I don't blame them. They found some stuff on his MySpace page that alluded to some sort of plot to shoot up the school. Here in Florida, threats like that are taken very seriously, even if it's just some messed up teenager spouting some crap because he hates life. Turns out, the police found more than 28 firearms at his house. Although, to be fair, they were all registered to George's grandfather, and they were kept in a locked gun cabinet. Though, I suppose getting access to the guns wouldn't have been too difficult for someone like him. Thankfully, George was taken away and nothing ever came of his plans. Sadly, Moore Mickens was shut down a few years ago. Aside from this incident, I ended up having pretty good times there. I got my act together and ended up graduating in the class of 2010. I can't say for sure if George would have gone through with it, but I never forget the cold certainty behind what he said that day in art class. You'll see. Everyone will. My friends and I were in high school when we came across a Ouija board at Toys R Us. We decided we wanted to try it out and see if it really worked. There were three of us in my basement with the board on the floor, and we began asking the usual questions you might see in any horror movie or paranormal TV show. We started off with the usual, "Hello," and waited for the board to start working. The planchette slowly began to move, and I accused one of my friends of pushing it. My friends both let go, and I felt the planchette moving on its own with my own hands. I don't really know how to describe the sensation, but it was almost as if a magnet was dragging it all around the board. "How many people are in the room with us?" we asked. "Four," the board answered, even though there were only three of us in the room. When we continued to ask, "Are you alive?" and the planchette slowly dragged itself to "No." "Are you nice?" my friend Jess had asked the question, at which point the planchette returned to the middle of the board and then quickly forcefully moved back to "No." I remember at this point the air felt much heavier and my heart began to beat pretty fast. I was starting to feel that fight or flight response. "What is your name?" my friend Sarah asked in a deep and serious tone. The pointer moved its way to one letter, and then another, and then another, beginning to spell out a name of a demon that I recognized. As it was in the middle of spelling its name out, I gasped and said the name out loud. As I did this, the planchette stopped dead in its tracks and a long, black millipede crawled out from under my bed, ran over the board, and exited the room from underneath the door. My friend screamed and we quickly got up and put the board back in its box. We didn't quite know what to do with the board because we were so afraid. We were sure there was no good way of disposing it, and burning it could make it worse. So we stored it in the back of my garage, which at this time was a separate building from my house. That night, we didn't think much else of what had happened. However, we were still quite freaked out. I remember sleeping with my grandmother's rosary beads by my bed, even though I am far from religious. It is really funny how stuff like this works. The next day when I woke up, my mom called from outside in a panic. There was a decapitated baby rabbit left merely inches from the porch steps, its head left to the side of its body. I can tell you this, that's the first time anything like this has ever happened to me. At that time, I lived close to a city, so wild animals usually never hung around. The following week, I remember getting really, really ill, to the point to where I had a high temperature and couldn't get out of bed for days. This illness slowly got better, but it lasted for weeks. My friends, however, were fine. It only seemed to be affecting me. From then on, not much else had happened. However, whenever my dogs went downstairs, they would start shaking and run back up right away. If I had any guests stay in the basement, they always reported getting creeped out, especially by the dark hallway in the back, and almost everyone reported having nightmares each night they stayed in the basement. Any small animals such as fish, hermit crabs, and hamster who lived in the basement met an ultimately untimely death. We eventually decided it was best to not raise anything down there anymore. The strange part about this is that it never happened up until this point. In fact, it was a nice finished basement with a good amount of sunlight and ventilation. We had animals living there for well over 10 years without any problems. Our family had guinea pigs, rabbits, frogs, and all kinds of stuff that lived long, healthy lives down there. One time, my little sister slept in the basement and said she had a horrible nightmare. When she woke up, the closet door opened, and there was an old woman sitting there staring at her, pointing a long, gnarly finger directly at her. Although she didn't say anything, apparently her expression showed a lot of intense emotion. Thinking about what happened still freaks me out and my entire family to this day. Now that I think back on it, I remember they had these old walkie-talkies from the late 80s or early 90s, and one day when we turned it on in the basement, there was an angry male voice swearing and screaming for a really long time over the radio. The screaming wasn't really directed at anyone. It was just meaningless, vulgar phrases. Maybe the radio was just picking up on a random person's call. However, it went on for so long that I couldn't imagine someone just sitting there swearing all day. It's been about 10 years now, and I no longer live in that house. Since then, I've had no contact with the new owners of the house, so I do not know whether or not this stuff still goes on. These could have all been a coincidence, but I think so much happened in such a short amount of time that I can't really write it off as such. I'd be interested to find out what you guys think. I'm a 25-year-old woman and I've been living in Japan for a few years now. It's a beautiful country, every bit as fascinating and as alien as I imagined. But I do have one major complaint. In rural areas, where foreigners are a rarity, Japanese men can become a little bit obsessive when it comes to foreign girls. Especially fair-haired, blue-eyed girls such as myself. I've dealt with quite a few situations where I was beyond uncomfortable. Even one or two where I feared I might be abducted, or worse. One such encounter took place a few years back when I was in my third year of my university course. The following was a very brief encounter, but a terrifying one nonetheless. I was studying abroad in a school in Saitama, essentially a suburb of Tokyo, being only 15 miles or so away from the capital city center. I was meeting a lot of new people, making a lot of new friends, getting a really nice practice to my Japanese, and generally having the time of my life. One day, after classes were finished, my friends invited me to go shopping with them at a local supermarket to get some things for a nabe party. For those of you who do not know, nabe is basically a potluck dinner kind of thing. You get some fresh vegetables and cuts of meat, and then you put a big pot of little gas burner before everyone gathers around and eats together. It's a huge part of traditional Japanese culture and a great way to socialize. I was over the moon that they invited me. I was usually left out of these things because at first I was considered an outsider, whereas they had known each other since their freshman year. Though, over the few months that we had been getting together, they'd grown more like a family to me, each one like an overprotective big brother, especially a guy named Shinji. He was short and a bit on the heavy side, but he was extremely charismatic. Whenever he saw me fumbling around, nervous or confused, he quickly appeared by my side and threw a heavy arm around my shoulder asking, "What's the problem, Jamie-chan?" We all went to our friend's house for the party and ended up drinking and talking until pretty late. I checked my phone at one point to discover that it was already like 4 in the morning. Not only that, but my battery was dying. The guys have already decided that they were going to sleep for a few hours until the train started back up, but I was only about a 30-minute walk away from my shared apartment. I announced that I was leaving and started packing my stuff up. Shinji offered to walk me home, but I politely declined. It would be sunrise soon, and it really wasn't that far at all. I made it to the station safely, only to see a single car parked outside with a man I didn't recognize. He was staring at me, leaning up against it. He was much older than me, in his mid-30s or early 40s at the very least. His head turned, watching me as I approached the station. I began to pick up my pace a little, crossing to the other side of the street to avoid him as best as I could. But I heard the car door slam and the engine start up. Headlights illuminated me, and then he turned to drive alongside where I was walking. His window rolled down. "Good morning, Gaijin," he said in Japanese. Gaijin, meaning foreigner. "You are walking alone?" "No, I am meeting with friends soon," I replied politely. "My word, you speak very good Japanese. Where are you going?" I started walking faster, pretending not to hear his last question. "You are very beautiful. Can I get your phone number?" he asked. "I have a boyfriend." It was a lie, but I didn't know what else to say. But he suddenly pulled over his car just ahead of me before he opened the driver's door and got out. Let's get home together, he replied a little more vehemently, taking a few steps toward me on the sidewalk. I panicked immediately, sprinting into a nearby park. There were only a handful of entrances and exits, all of which a car could not enter thanks to some well-placed bollards. I pulled out my phone, immediately calling Shinji. Just my luck, though, he didn't answer. He was probably passed out, still drunk on weak Japanese beer. I tried my best to get to the rest of the group, but no one answered. I looked at the next exit just in time to see his car crawl by slowly. He was still searching for me. Trembling in fear, I tried again and again with no success to reach the guys. Just as I was about to cry, my phone lit up dimly with a phone call from Shinji. What's the problem, Jamie-chan? He said jokingly. I'd never been so glad to hear those words. In a flurry of words, I explained to him that I was potentially in serious trouble, though he didn't say a word the entire time. I could practically hear the smile leave his face. In a tone so serious it was almost weird to hear it coming from him, he told me to stay where I was and that he was on his way. But I was already 20 minutes into my walk, and I wasn't sure that I had 20 minutes before the guy parked his car and came to look for me on foot. I looked behind me again just in time to see him drive by that exit slowly, looking through. I don't have time. I'm going to make a break for it. Next chance I get, I explained. No, he said. Wait for me. I can run there and be there soon. But Shinji wasn't a runner, not by any stretch of the imagination. There was absolutely no way he could get there any faster than I could. He started to say something more, but my phone suddenly went dark. Dead battery. There was no turning back now. I waited a few seconds and there he was, right on schedule. He crawled by the exit, then stopped, waiting for his moment to pounce. My heart was pounding so hard I could hear it thumping in my chest. The sun was starting to come up now, and he had a better view. It was really now or never. He slowly moved forward. I crept out of my hiding spot and moved toward the exit. I poked my head out and saw him turn the corner. I sprinted toward my house and didn't look back. I don't know if he saw me and I was too fast to follow or what, but I didn't even see that guy again. I immediately put my phone in the charger and called the guys back to let them know I was okay. But Shinji, never, ever let me walk home alone again. Thanks for listening to these creepy, allegedly true stories sent in by viewers just like you. These stories could happen to anybody at any time, and I think that's what makes them so scary to so many viewers. As I said in the intro, these are not my typical stories. I don't normally delve into the world of people, but it's fun to do something a little bit different outside of the woods and magical beasts of all kinds. If you enjoyed my guest Fit of 22, please be sure to subscribe to his channel. He's getting very close to 10,000 subscribers, and it would be awesome to see him hit that before the end of the year. So if you could, check out his link in the top of the description and give him a subscribe. He really does deserve it. If you have a story you would like to share in a future video, whether it be something with a stalker or something with a ghost or whatever else it may be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp, and stories like yours to help keep this channel going. If you're not aware, you can download your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Stitcher Radio, and pretty much every other major podcasting platform out there. I know a lot of you don't have great data all the time, so this will definitely help you keep up to date with all your favorite stories up in the swamp. If you enjoyed these stories, please hit that like button, as it helps me out a ton. And if you're new to the swamp, why not subscribe and turn on notifications to never miss a new video. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video. And if you made it all the way to the end, today's code word is suffering kitty cats. See you guys soon. Tally ho.